Thanks. So, as was anticipated by Mina in the pre-talk discussion, I will lead you to a journey, okay, that starts from a very old-fashioned question, that is how we will discover supersymmetry. Okay, this is a question for a vintage shop. And then I hope that I will say something interesting about a second that question that to me needs still to be defined. And I'm not sure that the question is even well defined, but I will try to ask it anyway, is which class of QFTs can give rise to gravitational wave signal, okay? Okay, so let me just, so the talk will be really this divided in roughly in two. So the first part is really, it will set up the stage for what I mean by how we will discover supersymmetry, okay? So let me go through this. I mean, of course, the older you are, the more you know these things, okay? Now, how we did not discover natural supersymmetry, this is something that everyone knows. Just because from a purely collider perspective, what we hunt for, if we want to hunt for supersymmetry, is the superpartner scale, okay? That we, because of naturalness of the electroweak scale, needs to be like, around TV, okay? If you allow for percent tuning. And of course, LHC result has put this into question. In the rest of the talk, when I will talk about SUSY scale, I will talk about the gluino mass, okay? This is a conservative proxy because the gluino is very abundantly produced at LHC. So I'm not gonna play games like squeezing spectra or et cetera, et cetera. So don't ask me this, okay? Now, setting aside the mystery of the electroweak scale, which supersymmetry are we talking about, okay? So of course, if we look at very high energies, a SUSY universe would still be welcome because of, at least to some of us, the ones that care about perturbative gauge coupling unification. We shouldn't forget that in supersymmetry, there are dark matter candidates that's come out, let's say, sort of naturally from requiring matter parity, okay? And embedding in string theory is something that, of course, SUSY is required at some energy scale at some point. Now, what we lose if we set aside the mystery of the electroweak scale is that if the spectrum is allowed to be unnatural, it becomes less robust as a target for collider, okay? What is robust instead is that if we live in a supersymmetric universe, for sure SUSY has to be broken, okay, at some scale, okay? And this has surprising consequences also on the low energy spectrum, okay? One of the main consequences is that there is at some scale, okay, F over M Planck, there is a spin triumph state, that is the gravitino, which is related to the scale at which SUSY was broken via the super Higgs mechanism. Okay, exactly like electroweak gauge boson are related to the Verwoerd Higgs. Okay, so the goal here of this first part of the talk is to convince you, without giving you the details of the nature of the phase transition in the SUSY breaking hidden sector, that if the SUSY breaking hidden sector, so the dynamics responsible to generate this dimension two VEV, okay, F, has been rated after inflation, and it underwent like a first order phase transition, This will actually lead to a gravitational wave signal at future interferometer that have a frequency that is within the reach. Okay. The reason why this is true is that the frequency of the signal will correlate with the SUSY spectrum, and it is going to be constrained by the requirement of a viable cosmology, as I will show. Okay. And the second part of the talk, I will actually investigate the nature of the phase transition in the SUSY dense sector. Okay. Trying to characterize the generic features. Okay. So let me just give you a sketch of what I mean by SUSY breaking hidden sector. So if you want to break supersymmetry, you need at least one chiral superfield. Okay. This is a, which means just to remind ourselves basics of supersymmetry, which means that I need a spin 1/2 massless fermion, which is the Goldstone mode of spontaneously broken supersymmetry. And then the top component of this supermultiple that is gonna be the SUSY breaking VEV that I'm always gonna indicate in this talk with big F, okay? And now the bottom component that is gonna be somehow the hero of the story, okay, sets the R symmetry breaking scale, okay? The bottom component. And for the moment, we keep the scale frozen to the VEV, okay? Because we are not interested in the SUSY breaking sector dynamics, okay? Now, the picture of all the SUSY models that have been elaborated from the 90s till now is roughly, let's say, there is a depicted in this sketch diagram, okay? So the SUSY breaking sector is gonna talk to the super partner and they're gonna generate soft masses that are a coupling times square root of F. And of course, the strength of this coupling determines the scheme, okay? The SUSY scheme. And the very same coupling has also quite important cosmological consequences. In particular, it's gonna set the nature of dark matter. Let me make an example that is probably the simplest one, that is gravity mediation. So if gravity mediation is just in this language, no, the coupling between the visible sector and the SUSY breaking sector is Planckian, okay? And as a consequence, is the gravitino becomes very heavy, and typically the electroweakinos are the lightest SUSY particle. So this is the framework of split SUSY type of scenario, where if you bet on this type of supersymmetry being realized at high energies, you should definitely keep hunting for WIMPs, okay, in indirect detection or at future colliders. Now, low energy SUSY breaking is exactly the opposite limit, okay? So as long as we take this GM coupling between the SUSY breaking sector and the super partner bigger than square root of F over M Planck, okay? That's basically the definition of low energy SUSY breaking, which has, one possible implementation is gauge mediation. There are many, okay? And it's not gonna be important for this talk. But keep in mind that this GM coupling is typically a very small coupling, okay? A very perturbative coupling, okay? And as a consequence, the gravitino is the lightest supersymmetric particle in this framework, okay? Notice that the coupling of the gravitino in this setup, okay, are dominated by the coupling of the longitudinal mode, okay? So it's really the spin 1/2 component of the spin 3/2 guy that is coupling to the standard model current, okay? It's exactly analogous to the Goldstone theorem for electroweak gauge bosons. Okay, so far so good. What are the consequences? Well, the consequences that if you insist for some crazy theory prejudice, okay, that you want your SUSY breaking hidden sector to be rated, So you want the rating temperature to be bigger than the Susie breaking scale, then you end up having a very constrained cosmology, okay? Which is constrained by the so-called Gravitino problem. So there are many papers that are somehow referred to this Gravitino problem. It's not always the same problem. So this problem is the problem of the longitudinals, okay? So the Gravitino problem here is really the overproduction of the longitudinal modes of the Gravitino, so the Goldstino, okay? It can be completely captured by this vertex, okay? So if you, for example, one of the many, many diagrams is this glue that goes to Goldstino, gluino, okay? So what is this problem actually gives you an upper bound, okay, on as you see, an upper bound on the Susie breaking scale, and indirectly, the reason is that the Gravitino production is enhanced by 1/(1) the inverse of the Gravitino mass square, okay. So in order to avoid Gravitino overabundance, okay, you basically end up requiring two things. Either you see you have two available window. Either this is the, can you see my pointer or no?
Yes, we can see the
pointer. Ah, okay, good. So as you see, there are two available windows from this paper by Lawrence, Josh, and Tomer. So either the Gravitino is ultra light, okay, and it makes like a fraction of the dark matter relic abundance, so a very small hot component of dark matter, or is basically freezing dark matter, but UV dominated freezing. Okay, let me. So the ultralight Gravitino window is something a little bit crazy, okay, in the sense that the Gravitino is so strongly interacting, is very light, which means that the Susie breaking scale is very small, okay? So the Gravitino here is thermal. And if you go back to my picture, this means that the Susie breaking sector is very squeezed, very close to the visible sector. And this requires a large coupling in order for the superpartners to be out of reach of LHC. Okay. So of course, this is a model building challenge that I'm not going to address here because I'm going to be interested in very perturbative models. So let me just say that for some reason, this region is still experimentally alive, and it will be interesting somehow, in my opinion, to close it completely. The interesting fact is that the bound from World Dark Matter acts as an upper bound on the Susie breaking scale, okay? Because typically the bounds from World Dark Matter require the Gravitino to be less than, for instance, from the current analysis. Yeah.
That assumes those that has that's theory heat dependent.
No, this is here there is no dependence on rating because the Gravitino is thermal. So it freezes out, is relativistic, right? And from that, from the requirement that is not too warm, that you don't have too much of a warm component of dark matter, the upper bound.
But this is what I don't understand. I'm confused because if I start making F bigger, the coupling becomes smaller of the longitudinal mode of the gravity.
Exactly.
And then the coupling, so then you don't, not only, I mean, you're not thermal, but you're in the freezing, but then it depends on what your theory heat is.
No, indeed. Let me just tell you. So this is I was not clear. Now I'm here. Now I'm telling you about this window, this very small triangle. In this very small triangle, there is no dependence on theory heating, right?
Yeah.
If you go here, of course, the higher you take T rating, the more the parameter space will squeeze. Okay, as you see from these contour lines. Okay, so
no,
the first.
But I agree. But there is a range of f's that is excluded, right? There is an up. There is. Is it the pink that's excluded here in this?
Yeah, the pink is completely excluded. In the pink, you overclose, and also in the green, it's excluded because of BBN. Okay, you screw up BBN.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that in this ultralight gravitino window, which is basically an accident, okay? So it's just that the gravitino can be very strongly interacting, but light enough such that it makes an irrelevant component of the dark matter abundance today. That being said, collider bounds will actually constrain this window from below and warm dark matter bound from above. So you can, in principle, hope to completely close it. Okay. So, but at the moment, since the, for instance, the analysis on warm dark matter have not been updated with Planck data for the gravitino, there is still a couple of orders of magnitude open, window open. Now, in the case in which the gravitino is dark matter instead, the picture is basically that. That let me fix T rating to square exactly to square root of F, okay, which maximizes the parameter space. Then if you do that, you basically want to live on the tip of the yellow corner that I'm showing you to actually have a nice perturbative SUSY model with the GM, which is much, much smaller than one in my notation, okay? And notice that requiring the dark matter relic abundance will actually fix the gluino mass that is needed to actually produce enough gravitinos, okay? Now, this is the setup. So from the gravitino problem, we have an upper bound on the SUSY breaking scale, which is basically 10 to the 8 GV. Let's see if now we have a phase transition in the SUSY breaking hidden sector, how this relates to a possible signal in gravity waves. Okay, in order to do that, I need to specify, and I will do it in a model independent way, the nature of the phase transition that I expect from the SUSY breaking hidden sector. In order to do that, so let me tell you why this is possible. The reason is that every model of SUSY breaking, and this is like a sort of theorem, okay, flows at low energies to basically an effective theory of this chiral superfield, okay, where now the bottom component is dynamical and is just a complex scalar field that is called the pseudomodulus, okay. What is the pseudomodulus? It's a state that is, in a perturbative theory, is accidentally light, okay? You can think of it as the only object that I know that is somehow similar is the dilaton, okay? Even though they share some similarities, but they are very different objects. So this object doesn't get a mass at three level, because of this, as you see, the superpotential in order to break SUSY has to be linear in this complex chiral field, which means that the potential can only be generated at one loop. So if you are in a perturbative theory, the pseudomodulus is well below the cutoff. And this allows me to describe the phase transition.
Okay. Sorry, Nico, here lambda is what is the and M star is the messenger scale here that you remember. What
yeah,
is it?
So I will this what is lambda and what is M star is going to be very clear in an explicit model. Okay. But let me just say that I imagine the hidden sector as an arbitrary theory that can have like a bunch of states. So what I'm saying is just that all these states will live at some scale M star. And we'll have a coupling with the pseudomodulus which is controlled by lambda. Okay, so this for now, these are generic coupling. Okay, For instance, if you remember Hoffer time model from the even before the 90s, okay, the lambda is going to be the coupling between x between the pseudomodulus and the vector-like messengers, right? Okay. So
sorry. So I'm a bit confused. So can you remind me why it must be just linear in x? In Rafferty models, you also have quadratic terms.
No. The everything that is non-linear in x will break our symmetry. That's one way to see it. Another way to see it is that the potential is the derivative of the superpotential square.
Yeah.
Right. And you need this to be different from zero if you want to break supersymmetry. So you see that V equal to a square implies W equal to F times a field. And holomorphy, like since X needs to be holomorphic, basically it does the rest. Okay. But I'm going to show you explicit theories in case you are still puzzled. For the moment, believe me, okay? There is just this state that is one loop lighter than the cutoff. And what I'm going to describe is the tunneling between, okay? What I'm going to show you is that this state in a very large class of theories will have a potential in which there is a Susi breaking vacuum at the origin. And then the physical Susi breaking vacuum far away, which I call it physical because it's the one where our symmetry is spontaneously broken, which I need in any case to actually have Majorana Gaugino masses. Okay, so the phase transition that I'm gonna describe is actually related to the spontaneous breaking of our symmetry. Okay. Okay, let me just give you like one slide or maybe two about the dictionary of phase transitions. Okay.
So Diego, just to understand, yeah. So you, that will be the only light degrees of freedom that you have. So Galstino,
yeah, so
and models, say Gaugino masses, they will get, because you said that Majorana Gaugino masses are possible only in the new vacuum. But you assume that there are some masses, like Dirac masses, before, something like that.
No, actually, the Gauginos are actually massless at the origin.
Okay. Ah. So they, but then their dynamics perhaps also should be taken into account. If they are massless,
well, no, because they are fermions, right? So they are not going to affect. They're fermions, no?
Well.
And also they will live in the plasma. So of course, I'm going to talk about the plasma effects. Yeah.
Okay.
So that I'm going to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So these guys, they live in the visible sector. They're strongly, they interact strongly with the standard model. And then there is this other guy that is there and is going to basically parameterize the hidden sector dynamics, okay? This is possible. Let me just stress once more that this is possible only because I'm living at weak coupling. Okay, mm-hmm. Strongly coupled theories that break supersymmetry typically don't have light states. Okay,
yeah. I mean,
some of them have, but not generically. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me just assume for now that a first order phase transition will be produced by the pseudonomodulus dynamics. I will then show you how. And so if thermal fluctuation dominate, the tunneling probability is gonna be encoded by this quantity, okay? The S3 over T, which is basically gonna control the rate of tunneling at finite temperature. And we can define a nucleation temperature just by intersecting S3 over T with a straight line, okay, which is roughly 100. I mean, the things is more complicated than that, but like it's gonna be a good approximation in our case because we will always deal with fast enough phase transition. So this nucleation temperature basically tells me when one bubble okay, will be nucleated parabole volume. Okay. Now, in order to assess the detectability of gravitational waves, and ultimately what I expect in the parameter space of the models that I have in mind, I need to answer three questions. Okay, one is, what is the typical energy released during the phase transition? Okay, and this is basically roughly the jump in the potential energy divided by the energy in the plasma, computed at the nucleation temperature. The second is the duration of the phase transition, the shorter the better. Okay, and notice that if I'm dealing with the phase transition that have a mass gap, this quantity beta over H, beta, let's call it beta H, okay, which is actually a dimensionless number, which tells me how fast is the phase transition, okay, is gonna always be zero at some point, at some temperature, okay? And this is gonna be the minimal temperature, okay? After which the S3 over T is gonna raise again, okay? This is very different from phase transition where instead you don't have a mass gap. And for instance, you can have period of supercooling. The third feature that I need to investigate is the behavior of the bubbles of new vacuum in the cosmic plasma. Okay, let me just spend one word on this, because here there is something special that happens in our theories. Okay, so in order to actually assess this microscopic behavior of the bubbles, what I need to understand is, okay, I have some energy release, okay, that is expanding, okay, and I need to compute the pressures that are gonna try to stop it, to compute the ultimate value of the velocity of the bubble asymptotically. Okay, so there are actually various type of pressure that comes either for like one-to-one processes, okay, so a state that is changing mass going from inside to outside the bubble, or like one to two, if for instance you wanna account for radiation, okay? Actually, the novelty here is that
Diego, can I ask you something? Sorry, but I'm a bit confused about the type of setup exactly you have in mind. In more details about the Suzy breaking sector parameters.
Yeah.
For example, are you worried at all about which vacuum you may end up in? Because there are other scalars in the theory. Are you ending up in the right vacuum? Are you destabilizing?
That's a good question. So in my setups, there are always gonna be vector-like masses to everything else, okay, that is not the pseudo modulus, okay. So if you want, let me just give you already like the theory, since
can you start from the theory, because it will make it easier to follow. I'm sorry.
Yes, sorry. So take for instance this, okay. This is a typical theory. So yes. You see everything. So the heavy fields. The heavy fields have a vector-like mass, M, which my generic parameterization is just M star, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they talk with a pseudo-modulus with a coupling lambda, okay? This, by the way, is the Rafferty model that we study at school, right? Just a vector-like.
The good old days, yes.
Exactly, yes. We were studying. And as you see, X interacts with these states that have a mass gap, okay? And you see, if I write at low energy the potential, you see, what do I have? I have a vacuum at the origin, okay? And then I have another vacuum far away from the origin, which is generated in this very simple model, just from this tiny deformation that I'm putting, this green box, okay? Because I'm putting a cubic in the superpotential, okay? Which is actually breaking
R symmetry.
Okay.
Now, so, I mean, can you end up in the row? Yeah, so, okay, continue, sorry, yes.
So now at high temperature, okay? At high temperature, you will always be, at high temperature, if lambda is large enough, you will always be in the origin. Okay. Then when you lower the temperature, you will have a regular phase transition. Funny things can happen that I wanted to talk about it later, but if you want, I can talk it now since we are in a very informal mood today.
I think it's great.
Funny things can happen if this coupling lambda is actually a small coupling. And the reason is that temperature correction break, since temperature breaks supersymmetry, okay? Temperature correction break the flatness of this potential. So you have to imagine this potential is very flat and is just lifted by quantum correction and temperature correction, okay? So let me just show you another plot. It's very hectic, this way of presenting. But you see, even in this simple Rafferty model, there are very surprising features, okay? So for instance, if lambda is large, the origin is the global minimum always, and then I can go on with my talk. But if lambda is small, then there are new feature happening. For instance, there is another vacuum that is whose like position in field space depends on temperature, okay? Which is something very unique. I mean, I never encountered it before. So because this direction will be completely flat if it was not for temperature, okay? So the position in field space of this vacuum is actually T dependent, okay? So basically this is the setup that I have in mind. So everything is gapped, okay? So it's not like, for instance, Randall-Sundrum type of setup where if I go to the, or like Dilaton type of setup, that if I bring the Dilaton to the origin, I don't know what I'm doing, right? Because there the theory is truly strongly coupled. Here, everything is weakly coupled everywhere and gapped. And indeed, a related thing that I wanted to say is that typically when you look at the behavior of these bubbles that are expanding, you might think that the very heavy states that have a vector-like mass, you can forget, okay? But that's actually, in this case, is not the case, because if when this bubble starts to be very boosted, okay, even the heavy states can actually generate a friction. And the reason is that it's true that they are heavy, so you will pay a Boltzmann suppression, but their mass difference in going from inside to outside the bubble is gonna be very large, okay? Okay, so that's one thing. So the net result of this is that typically this phase transition from Susie breaking Eden sector will not have critical bubbles. So most of the energy will be released into the plasma, and the dominant gravitational wave signal is gonna be coming from you know, sound waves. So if you accept this, I can show you these plots, okay, that basically tells you what are the value of the energy release and the speed of the phase transition in order for the gravitational wave signal to be within reach of future gravitational wave interferometers, okay? Notice that the bottom of these plots is shaded because I think that this is tuned. And I mean, the rough reason is simply that this speed cannot be smaller than 10 or 100 unless you tune. And you can see it very simply because if you compute this beta over H, you have a number that is 100 and then a piece that is temperature dependence. So this number is roughly, this beta is will be always 100 unless you tune these two numbers against each other, okay? So if you put everything together, gravity no problem and all that, you end up with this plot, which is basically telling you that since the nucleation temperature is ultimately going to be related to the Susie breaking scale, so it's going to be proportional to square root of F, okay? The gravitino problem itself is gonna basically bound the frequency of the gravitational wave signal from above, okay? And this is a pure luck, okay? As you see from this plot, for square root of F less than 10 to the 8 GeV, the signal is always going to be within the reach of high frequency gravitational waves detector, like LIGO or Einstein's telescope, in the perturbative region, okay? And the other message that perhaps is underappreciated, because we always think about avoiding bounds and not taking them at face value, is that if you actually want to rate the theory at very high energy, so comparable to the Susie breaking scale, future collider can actually completely exclude this type of Susie, okay? There is nothing to do, okay? As you can see, the reach of SCC HH is gonna actually close the window on that.
Can I ask, okay? Sorry, Diego, but it's been a while since I thought about Susie breaking. So the question I have for you is, what does the vacuum structure look like? Do you end up in the right vacuum for electrosymmetry breaking?
Yes, so that's, so somehow this phase transition that I will show are related to this problem that you remember. So there was an old problem for example, ISS, no? Where people were saying, when I do reheating, there is this Susie preserving vacuum that is coming closer and closer to the origin. And then maybe I will have problem if I end up there or there, okay? So in this case, what can I tell you? So in this case, if, let's say I can check it explicitly, okay? In the sense that the dynamics of this pseudomodulus is fully calculable, okay? So if you accept, let's say there might be something else at higher energies that will screw up, okay? Because when you recomplete supersymmetry, there are always extra scalars, okay? But if you accept the fact that is my working assumption that there is a mass gap and then a single direction in field space that I can control, then I don't have that problem, okay? You might
I was thinking more also more detailed question about electroweak symmetry breaking, like what is the scalar structure of the standard model? Because there's gonna be vacua there as well.
Okay, I see. So this guy will talk to the standard model only to through higher dimensional operators, right? So they are gonna be very suppressed.
No, but there is still thermalized. Everything is thermalized. So everything is there. Do you end up in the right electroweak symmetry breaking vacuum? I mean, it could be a dumb question. I haven't thought about it in a while.
Oh, sorry, I'm confused about...
There is several scalars. What is the vacuum structure of...
Okay. So now you're saying if the Higgs is can actually...
Yeah, or the Higgs or the squares or everything like... But
at very high temperature, everything, I mean, all these guys are going to have a huge thermal mass, right? Here we are very high temperatures.
Yeah, but then how do you know the standard model end up in the right vacuum?
No, because let's say here, I'm just checking something about the UV theory. You know, I'm just checking that I end up in the Susie breaking vacuum. And when I will cool, then... electroweak symmetry breaking is one of the nice, only few nice features of SUSY left, right? In the sense that is, I mean, barring tuning is guaranteed, no? That the electric symmetry breaking is gonna,
no, no.
Gonna realize.
That's not really true, right? I mean, in principle, but anyway, continue. I can imagine.
Now I see what you're asking. So you're thinking about like if you have like very heavy masses, soft masses.
Yeah, exactly. Because who knows what will happen? You need cancellations to happen. So there is negative contributions that have to add to positive. Do you even get the right vacuum structure in this?
Yeah, that
and
like,
it's not clear. And it's not clear you can. I mean, in the level you're discussing, how you can take this into account, maybe a more detailed question, actually.
No, but this is, is not going to modify the phase transition at high energies, right? These two problems are factorized. I cannot hear you.
No, I agree with that. I'm not.
Good. Okay, very good. You're good. Okay, so just to set the scales, I'm gonna be focusing on theories in which indeed this phase transition happens at very high temperature, so order of 10^7, 10^8 GV. Okay. So what I want to tell you that I think is new and possibly interesting is that how this pseudomodulus phase transition actually depends on temperature.
Can I ask you, maybe this is related with what you're going to say. This is even a simpler question. So the first order phase transition that will depend, so this is just a thermal effect as you were saying, right? So that it will depend somehow on the couplings of your Rafferty model, that lambda or whatever that you had there. So this is, it's not really like that it always happens, right? So it depends.
No, of course. I mean, this is always the case also for the Higgs or like
absolutely
the Dilaton, right? So what the goal of this part now is to show you under which condition a phase transition can actually be strong enough to give right. you gravitational wave signal. Now, surprisingly, in this case, I can actually tell you some generic feature of this phase transition, some generic requirements, that the Hidden sector should have in order to have enough signal.
Okay.
For instance, I can already tell you that it needs to have two scales. Okay. If it has only one two SUSY breaking scale. If it has only one, you are not gonna have generically a signal. Okay. But of course, you are right. There are many models where the transition between the R symmetry preserving and the R symmetry breaking vacuum is second order, for instance.
Absolutely right.
Okay.
Right.
So it's difficult to. Is the signal is never guaranteed in this business, unfortunately.
Right.
Okay. So what I think is cute is that. Very roughly, okay. You can say, okay, for you can think of like phase transition in terms of how, at least thermal, how this S3 over T as a function depends on temperature. Okay. So for instance, for the Higgs, typically is a power law. Okay. While for the Dilaton, we have this supercooling phenomenon. Which is basically, put it in a very simple way, is the fact that S3 over T is 1 over log of M over T. Okay? And I will show you that in the pseudomodulus case, you have basically a power law modulated by an exponential suppression. Okay? And using that, then I will try to extract the parametric dependence. Of S3 over T, that is the quantity that we care if we care about the phase transition in terms of the theory parameter. Okay, so the potential that I have in mind is as follows. Okay, so here I'm using only the properties of this object. Okay, so the guy is massless at three level, and the potential is going to be generated by one loop. Corrections, okay? So what does it, it means? It means that the potential is going to be in general flat, which in terms of theory parameters, it means that the VEV of the true vacuum to the 4 power, okay, is much, much smaller than the gap between the false and the true vacuum, okay? And also the barrier between the two, since it's also loop generated, is also gonna be a small parameter that I can expand on, okay? Another result that I will show you is that the position of the barrier, the exact position of the barrier doesn't matter, okay? It doesn't affect the bounce action much, okay? Okay, so this is for the potential at zero temperature. When I switch on temperature, I have to ask myself, what is the right approximation to actually capture thermal correction if I don't want to run a code or if I want to run a code later, okay? So notice that by construction, the scale at which the phase transition happens is below the cutoff of the heavy states. So this Rafferty state that Mina asked me about before, okay? So by construction here, we are not we are always in a low T expansion, okay? So what the low T expansion means that the thermal correction, okay, to the pseudomodulus potential are gonna be dominated by the heavy states, okay, in the plasma, okay, that couples directly to the pseudomodulus, but are exponentially suppressed in the plasma. And the effect is basically, as usual, that are gonna make the origin deeper, okay, at the critical temperature. When I will lower the temperature, the phase transition will start. So actually it turns out that for this phase transition, we can approximate completely analytically the behavior of S3 over T, which is typically not the case, using the triangular barrier approximation, but using even more than the triangular barrier approximation, because this is a triangular barrier expanded for very small barrier, okay, and very flat potential. So it has this simple analytical expression that I'm showing you. And as you see, it agrees very well with the full numeric, okay? What is without looking at the details of this formula, one thing that you should appreciate is that the position of the barrier, which I call XP in my notation, does not appear in this expression, okay? So basically the bounce is independent on the position of the barrier.
Can I ask you something? So I think maybe I ask you something like this. Like, so on the top of the barrier, the Rafferty fermions are massless. Is that true?
No.
No? I'm still having trouble understanding what creates a barrier.
So the barrier is created by loops of these heavy guys.
But it's the thermal effect.
You have to imagine something very flat.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I understand, but it's
even a small deformation can give you
I understand that, but the effect is it's the loop, but it's the thermal loop, right? It's not the zero temperature loop.
No, it's the zero temperature loop.
It's a zero temperature loop, the thing that is creating the barrier.
I mean, you can also do it, you know, there is also going to be a contribution from the finite temperature, but at zero temperature, there are always going to be, there are two vacua and separated by a barrier, a very small barrier. As you see here, I need to zoom, right, to show you the barrier. You see, is the barrier is the light blue dot, okay?
Right. I see.
So it's not a big barrier because it's loop suppressed.
Right.
Okay.
I see.
So you really need to keep in mind, as I was saying, so this is not also for the, if you are familiar with the phase transition in the Higgs case or in the dilaton, that, I mean, typically there are states that are becoming massless when I go to the origin of field space, right? That's what you have in mind.
What I have in mind is that, so there's two places where you can become massless. It's one, it's at the origin, of course, but also if you have vector-like masses, there's level splitting. And then once you move the scalar away from the origin, that level splitting will push down the fermions to the origin. Like they will make them massless. And I think I thought that was happening here. In other words, if you write down if you write down the mass matrix for the Rafferty fermions.
Wait a second. So level splitting. So, you know, in supersymmetry, tachyons are not allowed.
For the fermions of the right for the Rafferty fermions. I thought that was happening there. Okay, and anyways,
the worry that they will cross the origin, I don't understand.
Yes, so the Rafferty fermions at zero BeV for X, they still have a mass, right?
No, maybe a short answer for that is that let's say the level splitting is always proportional to lambda, a coupling times F, which by perturbativity requirements needs to be less than M. So you never cross the origin. Let me show you you need level splitting is this, no?
Yeah, so you have
you see this level are split.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely.
Okay.
Right. So, and you say that you never cross the origin or the mass of one of the
fermions. You shouldn't, otherwise you open up a new direction in field space. And then my whole working assumption breaks down, I agree with you. In general, when you have a theory with that has many scalars, right? In order to make it calculable, you need to make assumptions. So that's my working assumption.
Okay.
I have only one direction in field space.
Okay. So,
how am I doing with time? I'm already out of time. But let me just say a few. I mean, this thing that is interesting. I think so. So we have this full analytical expression, and now we can play with it. So the first thing that we discover is that the bounce is independent on the barrier position. And the second thing that is also something that I think it's, at least I never appreciated before working on this. So you can actually work out an analytical expression for the nucleation temperature. And you see that in this expression, there are always two competing pieces. And so this shows that if delta V is fixed, so the gap between the false and the true vacuum is fixed, then the energy release in the plasma is maximized when the nucleation temperature is tuned to be small. But this is still like a kind of tuning, okay? So basically when you are close to not nucleating, the signal is going to be enhanced, okay? Or in this language is when the nucleation temperature is going to get closer and closer to the minimal temperature. Okay, so the toy model, I already showed it before to Mina, is basically the following. So I have a three-level flat potential, which is however lifted, let's say the vacuum energy is above zero, of course. So otherwise, SUSY is not broken. And if R symmetry is completely unbroken, what I have is just this log correction, which, as you see, this also was asked before. They are never singular. Okay, there is not a point in moduli space where this log is singular. This is very different from the dilaton, where instead the log is singular in the origin. And they tend to be a pure log at very large field values. Okay, so this is the flatness. Of course, this pure log can be beaten up if I switch on are symmetry breaking contribution, which are this green quartic. Okay, so the quartic will be the log, but of course this quartic can be parametrically small, okay, because it's related to a global symmetry that that controls it. Okay, so it explicitly breaks a global symmetry. Now, the interesting result from this toy model is that if the vacuum energy is proportional, let's say is related to the scale that sets the pseudomodulus potential, so that sets this log correction, then the energy release, okay, in the phase transition is loop suppressed, okay? So it's suppressed by roughly a factor of 10 to the minus 2, which can be compensated by this kappa d, which means that it can be compensated if I have multiple scales of Suzy breaking, okay? So if I don't tune my parameters, then this means that gravitational wave signals are generically possible in Suzy breaking dense sector with two Suzy breaking scale. So this is basically the general story of what we can learn by this analytical and generic treatment. Let me show you a model.
Diego, I don't think I got, why do you need two scales? Can you?
So the reason is the following. So do you agree that delta V in this model is gonna be kappa D F square. You okay. Can read it off from the potential, right? Because so the nucleation temperature, if I don't tune the model to be very close to nuclei, to be, let's say, to be at the edge of not making it with the transition, it's gonna be roughly square root of F, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So if I plug this number in this ratio, you see that I get alpha, that is 10 to the minus 2 times a number, which is this kappa D, times F over M star, which is an order one parameter.
Okay.
Okay, can be at most order one. So this means that alpha is always gonna be 10 to the minus 2 unless this new coupling kappa is much, much larger than one. Okay, what does it mean, this coupling much, much larger than one? That the scale that sets the Suzy breaking vacuum is not the same that sets the pseudomodulus potential. Because you see uh-huh. that in the potential I have F square, right? And then the vacuum energy that is kappa d F square.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So my pointer disappeared. Wait a second.
No, I think I saw
it.
You
see it now?
Yeah.
So basically I have this piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have this piece that is the pseudomodulus potential.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is proportional to F square. And then I have this piece which is the jump,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the only way of getting alpha order one, say, is to actually have this jump larger than this.
Yeah, otherwise you get alpha okay. 10 to minus two. Alpha is what? Alpha is actually, what is actually alpha? Is the abundance of gravitational wave?
Yeah, exactly. It's related to the energy release in gravitational waves. And as you see, for 10 to the minus 2, I suffer to make it visible. Okay.
Where do I see?
I mean, you typically need, I mean, from these plots that I'm showing you, generically, or, let's say, yeah. Depends on the experiment, no? This is the reach of the experiment.
Ah, here's alpha.
This mm-hmm. is the reach of the experiment for different. You see, alpha is the x-axis, right?
Yeah, well.
So if you nuclear. If you nucleate at high temperature,
mm-hmm.
I mean, of course, it's not a theorem, but, you know, it's an indication, I guess.
No, but even yeah, but even alpha 10 to minus 2, you can speculate that you can have like future. In future, you can probably see it. Yeah, so it's not something completely out of reach.
It's not completely out of reach, but let's say I would not claim that is a very likely prediction of that theory. No, mm-hmm. I mean, of course, if experiment will improve, which I'm not sure how to even estimate, because already these reach are very optimistic, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yes.
So that's what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm trying to convey here. Okay. We are already playing the optimist game.
But in the end,
so at least I want to have
it. In the end, you don't have dependence of lambda anywhere. Is where's the? I mean,
lambda.
Do your results depend on lambda at all? They don't seem to. Oh, there.
Well, I mean, you can always cast it in the combination lambda f over m square if you want, right? Because f sets. You need to set an overall scale, right?
Yeah, that's F.
So, I mean, yeah. If you want, they depend on lambda, but I think that it's better to think of it as lambda F over M square.
I see. So that's okay. The SUSY water.
Is the effective coupling, if you want, after you integrated out the heavy fields.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Well, here I'm showing you a model with two scale, which is a Rafferty with some gauge U1. And what can I say? I can show you this plot because everyone shows it. So these are signal in gravitational waves. And so the nice thing is that if you are really from the 90s, okay, you can push let me say the following. So what I want to convey is that this model is not crazy, okay? It's a very simple Eden sector. It's just a Rafferty, okay? Basically, small deformation of a Rafferty. The value of the couplings that I'm putting are not crazy, okay? Are not any large. And so this lambda needs to be order one, okay? But you see that with the SUSY breaking scale that are of order 30 PV, so very, very high SUSY breaking scale, that allow me to have gluinos that are out of reach of LHC, I can actually have a signal in gravitational waves at future Einstein telescope, or even with a little bit of more optimism at advanced LIGO, okay? So that's, I mean, if you care about this model, then I can tell you. But let me finish up here because it's already 10 minutes after my time. So yeah, so I think that the idea of this talk was really to start from a very generic question about how SUSY breaking can relate to gravitational wave signal, and in the end, what I enjoy the most is actually to work out this the feature of this pseudomodulus phase transition. That actually open up, I think, new ways of realizing first-order phase transition at finite temperature, okay? Because in supersymmetry, you have this weird feature of having a very flat direction, which are not related to a theory which is gapless, okay? And this ended up giving us basically three novelties, okay? The importance of the low T expansion in treating the thermal correction, the pressure on the bubble wall exerted by Boltzmann suppressed state, and our analytical treatment, I think that showed that let's say two Susie breaking scale would be better to actually have the hope, okay, of having a signal there. Of course, in order to if you would see a signal, okay, in order to be sure that it's supersymmetry, then you need to switch on a 100 TV collider and search for the Gluino because it should be there. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Diego.